Chapter 16, When Growth Became the Answer. The Post-War Consensus. The Second World War marked a turning point in economic policy. Governments had demonstrated that they could mobilize enormous resources, coordinate complex production, and manage economies on an unprecedented scale. After the war, those capabilities were redirected toward reconstruction and growth. The emerging consensus was simple: growth was the answer. Growth would create jobs, raise living standards, fund social programs, stabilize economies, and help prevent a return to the Great Depression. It would also provide the prosperity needed to rebuild societies after the devastation of war. The institutions created at Bretton Woods in 1944 reflected this vision. The International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade were designed to support international economic stability, trade, investment, and development. The consensus extended beyond policy. People came to expect that the future would be better than the present, and that their children would be richer than they were. For roughly three decades, that expectation appeared justified. From 1945 to the 1970s, much of the industrialized world experienced extraordinary economic growth and rising living standards. But the post-war system was built in a particular historical environment, one of abundant resources, expanding populations, reconstruction, and rapid productivity growth. That environment would not last forever. The policy shift of 1971. A major financial turning point came on the 15th of August 1971, when President Richard Nixon suspended the convertibility of the US dollar into gold. The Bretton Woods monetary system effectively came to an end. This did not mean that money suddenly became backed by nothing. Modern fiat money is supported by government institutions, taxation capacity, legal frameworks, monetary policy, and confidence in the currency. But the direct convertibility of the dollar into gold was removed. The change mattered because the monetary system was no longer constrained by a fixed gold convertibility regime. Credit and money creation could expand more flexibly in response to economic conditions. This did not automatically create debt-driven growth, nor did the end of gold convertibility remove all constraints on borrowing. Inflation, interest rates, taxation, fiscal capacity, productive capacity, and confidence remained important constraints. But the financial system entered a new era in which credit could expand on a much larger scale. Debt increasingly became a claim not on a fixed quantity of a physical commodity, but on future monetary income. That distinction would become increasingly important as debt accumulated. The Great Moderation. From roughly the mid-1980s to 2007, advanced economies experienced what became known as the Great Moderation: relatively stable growth, declining inflation volatility, and fewer severe economic fluctuations. Several factors contributed, including improved monetary policy, inflation targeting, structural changes in advanced economies, and greater international integration. The stability also changed expectations. People increasingly assumed that economic conditions would remain predictable. Businesses invested, households borrowed, and financial institutions took greater risks within an environment that appeared increasingly manageable. At the same time, financialization accelerated. Financial institutions expanded rapidly. New products, such as derivatives, securitization, and structured finance, allowed financial claims to be created, packaged, traded, and leveraged on an enormous scale. Finance provided real benefits: liquidity, diversification, risk management, and more efficient allocation of capital. But complexity also created vulnerabilities. The financial system became increasingly interconnected, and risks that appeared manageable in isolation could become systemic when markets moved together. The apparent stability of the Great Moderation encouraged behavior that ultimately made the system more fragile. The normalization of debt. Debt gradually shifted from being a last resort to being a normal mechanism for financing both investment and consumption. Governments borrowed for infrastructure and public programs. Businesses borrowed to invest and expand. Households borrowed for homes, education, vehicles, and consumption. Several forces encouraged this shift. Increasingly sophisticated financial products, periods of declining interest rates, rising asset prices, and easier access to credit. But the deepest support was the belief in future growth. If tomorrow was expected to be richer than today, borrowing against tomorrow seemed reasonable. Debt therefore became embedded in everyday economic life. That brought benefits. Credit allowed households to buy homes, businesses to invest before they had accumulated sufficient savings, and governments to finance projects whose benefits would arrive over many years. But debt also creates fixed obligations. When incomes and asset values rise, those obligations may appear manageable. When growth slows, they become more burdensome. The result is a fundamental dependency. Debt requires income to service it, and income is increasingly dependent on economic performance. The dependence on growth. By the end of the 20th century, growth had become more than an economic objective. It had become embedded in the structure of modern society. Governments relied on expanding tax bases to fund public services. Businesses relied on growing revenues and profits. Households relied on rising incomes and asset values. Pension systems relied on investment returns. Financial institutions also depended on borrowers being able to service their obligations. Growth therefore became both an expectation and a structural support. If growth slowed significantly, governments could face greater fiscal pressure, businesses could struggle to service debt, pension assets could underperform, and households could face declining incomes or asset values. The problem wasn't that every institution literally required perpetual GDP growth. It was that a large number of institutions had been designed around an expectation of continued economic expansion. The financial system was built for a world in which tomorrow was generally expected to be larger than today. Financialization. Financialization deepened this dependence. Finance developed increasingly sophisticated ways to create and trade financial claims. Derivatives, securitization, structured products, and leverage expanded the scale of the financial system far beyond traditional banking. This created genuine efficiencies, but it also changed incentives. More economic activity became connected to financial markets. Household wealth became increasingly tied to property and financial assets. Corporate decisions were increasingly influenced by financial returns and market valuations. The financial sector became both a facilitator of productive activity and at times a source of instability. The more interconnected the system became, the more difficult it was to understand where risk ultimately sat. The lesson isn't that finance is inherently harmful. Finance is essential to a modern economy. The problem is what happens when financial claims grow faster than the productive capacity supporting them. The psychological shift. The dependence on growth was also psychological. The post-war experience created a powerful expectation of progress. People had experienced rising incomes, expanding consumer choice, improving technology, and longer lives. Growth became synonymous with progress. Governments promised it. Businesses planned around it. Investors expected it. Economists measured it. Society came to regard it as the normal direction of history. This created a difficult feedback loop. If people expect continued growth, they are more willing to borrow, invest, spend, and take risks. Those actions can support growth, reinforcing the original expectation. But the reverse is also true. If growth persistently disappoints expectations, debt becomes harder to service, investment returns weaken, and confidence falls. A financial system built around expectations of expansion becomes vulnerable when those expectations change. The debt growth cycle. The resulting cycle can be expressed simply: growth to borrowing, to debt to need for future growth, to more borrowing. Governments borrow to support investment and demand. Businesses borrow to expand. Households borrow against expected future income. The financial system supplies the credit that supports the process, while the political system has incentives to maintain economic expansion. When growth is strong, the cycle appears sustainable. Rising incomes make debts easier to service. When growth weakens, the same debt becomes a constraint. This is why the problem is deeper than simply too much debt. The issue is the relationship between fixed financial claims and uncertain economic performance. The unasked question. For much of the Great Expansion, one question remained largely in the background. What happens if growth stops? The question was difficult to ask, because growth had become so deeply associated with prosperity and stability. But the answer does not have to be collapse. A mature economy can adapt to slower growth. Productivity can continue to improve, even when population growth slows. Living standards can rise through better use of resources, rather than simply through greater consumption. The financial system can also be redesigned. Instead of assuming that every financial claim must grow at a predetermined rate regardless of economic performance, some instruments could allow returns to move with the productive capacity of the economy itself. That is the principle behind the productivity bond. It is not a claim that growth should disappear. It is a proposal for separating prosperity from perpetual expansion. The system we inherited isn't necessarily broken. It is incomplete, designed for a world of expanding populations, abundant energy, plentiful resources, and consistently rising output. The question now is whether we can redesign it for the world that comes next.